The opinions expressed on this webmasterradio.fm program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of webmasterradio.fm. Any rebroadcast or retransmission of this program without the express written consent of webmasterradio.fm is prohibited.
Feeling better? Looking better? Making life better? It's Life Tips. We'll explore the latest innovations, introduce you to the latest products, and bring you the tips from experts and environmental pioneers to help you lead a better life. Life tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, wiser. Here are your hosts.
Welcome back to the Life Tips Show, everyone. I'm here with Pam Allen. Pleasure to have you on the show, Pam.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
Pam, you were the author of a book published in 2009 by Penguin Press called What to Read When. Tell us a little bit about the book and your illustrious background. You're also, by the way, the executive director of the nationally renowned Lit Life, which offers services to help schools transform themselves. So tell us a little bit about both your book and your background.
Well, I've been a literacy educator for my entire adult life, and I started Lit Life in 2002 to bring really best quality, effective training to teachers in the area of reading and writing instruction. And in the past decade, I've been talking to a lot of parents and grandparents and caregivers about their role in the home in terms of raising their children to be lifelong readers, and have been over the years very privileged to talk to families across this country and now across the world as well in terms of what their worries are and their hopes and dreams are for their children. So the book What to Read When was kind of simmering inside of me for a long time, and then a couple of years ago people reached out and said, you know, you should really write this down. And so I put together the book as a way to help people at home who are with their children to cultivate a love of reading first through the read aloud. So the book is a compilation of my favorite books, but also a lot of my meditations on what I think the right environment is to create a lifelong reader.
Pam, there's a lot going on with reading to children, and before we talk about some of the benefits and the power of that dynamic, maybe you can just explain the psychology a little bit of that event happening. You know, why is it important? You know, how would I even describe the question? Why is it important and why is it critical and instrumental for many, many things like relationship, trust, building? You know, I can only imagine that this event is a big deal. Maybe you can explain why.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. I believe that what's amazing about reading is that you have, it's almost like having a third party. You know, when you have a relationship with your child, it's sort of based on absolutely your love for that child and their love for you, but life is a lot of complications and bumps in the road and things that happen, and it's sometimes a little bit hard to navigate. You know, we're not perfect, and we're also navigating our own bumps in the road. So it's, you know, it's a little bit like that, like you're kind of making your way, I guess, through the life journey. And one of the things that we're so lucky to have is a body of literature that's written expressly for children, that are books written by people who have an incredibly exquisite insight into the lives of children in a way that I think we don't always have as adults. You know, we forget what it feels like to be a child. And a lot of really the best children's book authors have found a way to capture that essence. And then what it does is not only teach our children, but one of the things I say to parents and grandparents is that actually children's literature can also teach us. It reminds us to slow down and to really be attentive and tuned into the life of the child. You know, they haven't been on the Earth for that long. Their sense of time is really different from ours. Their sense of understanding about struggle and what it means to kind of live in the world is very different from ours. And children's literature kind of comes between us in a way. It makes it safer to talk about things and to create an intimacy where, you know, it's one thing to say to your child, how are you feeling? But it's quite another to sit down and read a really fun book about a badger, you know, who doesn't really want to go to sleep or doesn't really like to eat everything everyone's eating at the cafeteria. And then you can turn and say, you know, what do you feel about that? Or how's that, you know, how are you responding to this book? And then the book becomes a kind of a bridge between your world and the world of the child.
Interesting. How can reading communicate values to a child?
Well, I think, you know, the thing is they're definitely, even books that aren't, you know, it doesn't even have to be great literature for us to communicate values to our children. But, of course, there are books that I think are kind of the heart, you know, the heart of that book is beating with really strong values of compassion, or authors like Eve Bunting and Tommy De Paola and Patricia Polacco. They write about human relationships and loving your family and accepting people for their differences. But I think a lot of the time when we're looking for ways to teach our children values, we don't have to look for the book in the library or the bookstore that says, here's how you teach your child compassion, but actually a book like Frog and Toad, which is really just about, you know, two little animals making friends, can teach more to children about compassion than any book that's, you know, hitting us over the head with that, because Arnold Lobel, you know, has come up with a way to have those characters engage with each other throughout many linked stories that help us to see, well, that's what friendship is all about. You know, Frog and Toad, they're both kind of imperfect creatures, and they're kind of clumsy, and they don't always make the right decision, and they're not perfect, and they say hurtful things, or they, you know, they kind of make mistakes, but at the end of the day, they're really trying hard to be good friends to each other. And I think that's part of the whole idea of what literature can do to help our children, to help us build values in our children, is not always to be looking for the most obvious book, you know, here's how I'm going to teach my child not to hit his baby brother, but more, you know, find a book called, like, there's a new one out called The Boss Baby. And it's just a really hilarious book about this, you know, the baby is like already dressed in a little business suit, and he's just like the terror of the household. And that's a book you can read with your older, a child who's just, there's a new baby in the family, and that older child is feeling really complicated feelings, and you can read that book. You don't have to hit the, you know, your older one over the head with the message, be nice to your baby brother, but you can both have a good laugh over, yeah, you know, I feel like our baby's a little bit of a boss baby too, how about you? And so really you're building values, but it's not even just in your child, it's also in you, that you have the empathy for your child, not to just be reprimanding your older child, but to say, what is my empathy towards this child, which will help me to understand where he's coming from? And of course it's not okay to, you know, bop the baby brother over the head, but it's also, there are some big feelings in the house right now, and a book like The Boss Baby is just a funny, easy, graceful way to say, ah, I know how you're feeling.
Hmm. Can you talk a little bit about the age groups, the age group that you're talking about here, and when you might start reading and when you might stop reading with your children?
My daughters, we have one in college and one still in high school, and, you know, I still read aloud to them because it's, you know, as they get older and they get more independent, you're tempted to kind of say, oh, I don't need to read to them anymore because they know how to read themselves. But actually, they really need the sound of our voice, you know, and sometimes just having a conversation isn't enough. And there's a lot of really great literature that's written for older children that may be a little bit too hard, let's say, for your 8-year-old, but you could read it aloud to them and then have an amazing conversation. Or even, you know, your 10-year-old or your 12-year-old, there are some books where you can say, you know, I've been wanting to read this. Do you want to do this together? You know, every day when you come home from school, let's just take 10 minutes and read it, and I'm going to read it aloud. You know, we can even do it in different voices, you know, if we want to make it really exciting. But my daughters in high school, you know, we would read poetry at the table or a New Yorker article aloud or something really funny from the newspaper or something on the internet. And just for them to hear you reading – you know, just to stop and say, oh, listen to this. It's so beautiful. Or listen to this thing, you know, this great play-by-play that this writer gave about, you know, the Yankees in the paper today. That is just an amazing bit of writing. So that it's not, doesn't have to be great literature, but you're still communicating the sort of the power and the beauty of language orally, and you're also using, again, using the read aloud as a kind of a bridge. Now your children are in the teen years. They're not going to obviously cuddle in bed with you to read a book. And, you know, you have a little bit of a sense of loss over that, like, oh, those were the good old days. But actually you can get a lot of intimacy just sitting around a dining room table reading together.
I have a great a tip regarding reading, and I'd love to have your thoughts and opinions of it. Historically, I've always enjoyed the opportunity to hear, you know, poems written by all members of the family, especially on like a Christmas, you know, morning, where you, you know, yeah, you take a poem, 'twas the night before Christmas, you know, and but you have everybody, yes, make up their version of the poem. Have you ever heard, yeah, of that type of reading in a group format before in a family setting? Have you ever practiced anything like that?
I haven't done that myself, but it's a great idea. I love it. And I love what people come up with in their own homes and their, yeah, own families. And actually also, you know, teachers and classrooms come up with some really awesome ways to get, you know, get people reading and get kids to tell stories and then read them, mm-hmm, aloud. And, you know, that's, I mean, reading aloud from your own writing is really, and that's another thing you can do as your kids are growing up, is to say, I'm going to have actually a book coming out in the fall from Penguin called A Child's Writing Life. And in that one, you know, I'm really promoting the idea that children can, you know, write at home. It doesn't have to be just something they're doing in school or for homework. And there, too, you know, the read aloud doesn't have to be something that you found in the bookstore. It could actually be something your children are writing themselves. And that's a wonderful thing.
Could you talk with us about some tips on actually how to read to children or even aloud? You know, undulation in the voice, you know, et cetera. Digging, you know, showing your own passion for the story. Give us some tips, yep, and advice from you, the professional.
Well, you know, it definitely takes some practice. I mean, I've been reading aloud to children for so many years that when sometimes I'm listening to other parents at home and I kind of cringe, I think to myself, well, when have they ever done this before? You know, I mean, that's all I ever do. So it's not to be afraid to actually, like, by yourself when no one's around, to actually sit and practice a little bit. It sounds kind of silly, but it's the truth is that you can get a lot better at it. And sometimes parents will say to me, I'm like, you know, my kid never wants to sit still for my stories, and, you know, I know you're telling me to read aloud, but he won't, you know, he just isn't interested. And I think to myself, you know, it is actually a little bit of an art form, and it's worth practicing, but also to practice with your kids, you know, to actually try a passage in different ways, or even just to say to your child, let's read this page three different ways and see how we like it best. Just because sometimes our children actually don't want us to go overboard, like as if we're, you know, acting in a play or something, because they're trying to get the essence of the story and we don't want to overwhelm it with our own kind of dramatic reading of the tale. But so sometimes really just a quiet, calm, you know, really measured tone as you're reading, because so the child can really concentrate on the storyline or the plot or the character. But other times it's really fun to, you know, take different voices or to say, okay, I'll be Frog and you be Toad, and then let's see how we're going to make those voices sound. But really the main thing is for you to be comfortable and to make yourself as comfortable as possible when you're reading aloud, because you yourself might feel a little bit uneasy about your reading skills. I mean, a lot of adults have said that to me. You know, I met an accountant one day at a seminar I gave, and he said, you know, I'm really good with numbers. I'm actually not that good with words. You know, I've never been much of a reader, but I want my kids to read. And, you know, he's the kind of person that might want to just practice a little bit by himself. There's nothing wrong with that. And we certainly do the same when we're teaching our kids sports, or we're learning how to cook for them when they're little, and we're saying, oh, you know, I want to make sure they have good salads or good soups, and I'm going to practice how to do this. And the funny thing is we don't really take reading that seriously, and then we get all upset when our kids get to be age 7 and 8 and they don't want to read. But really, what effort have we put in to making sure that that's a value in our house, you know, and I think that's really important.
This has been fantastic. Let's take a quick station break. Back with some more tips and advice on what from Pam Allen, what to read when. Back in just a minute.
Life Tips will be right back after this short break.
Oh yeah, my day is done. Time for happy hour.
You're already done for the day?
Yeah, because I use CertifiedKnowledge.org. Their PPC tools literally save me hours every day.
How do you keep on top of all of Google's new features?
Easy. With Certified Knowledge, their interactive learning modules keep me up to date. And if there's something I don't know, I can watch their video lessons without having to hunt around the Google help files.
Great. I'm ready to expand my knowledge.
Hi, I'm Brett Geddes. I'm the only leader officially supported by Google to teach the advanced track of the AdWords Seminars for Success. I personally recommend CertifiedKnowledge.org as your one-stop shop for all your PPC needs.
Learn, optimize, connect. Be smart. Go to CertifiedKnowledge.org now.
Your advertising message is only as effective as your placement. You advertise with WebmasterRadio.fm. From 30-second commercials to 30-minute monthly programs, our team is comparable to any ad agency when it comes to production, placement, and positioning your message to not only the advertising world, but an even bigger audience of our loyal listeners and podcasters. Contact sales at WebmasterRadio.fm for a consultation today.
If you're looking for a new multifaceted SEO and social media toolset, look for the Raven. Raven has the important tools that every internet marketer needs. Raven offers customized metrics for managing link building campaigns, social media campaigns, with campaign reporting and research tools that you can easily manage. Build up campaign performance for your clients and give your team the tools that will make them soar. If you want to increase your internet marketing revenue, look for the Raven. Go to RavenTools.com. That's RavenTools.com.
Advance your affiliate marketing efforts every week on Affiliate Buzz. Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. Or on demand anytime inside the Affiliate Marketing Channel only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
And now back to Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, and wiser. Here are your hosts.
We're back with Pam Allen here to tell us some more tips and advice on what to read when to our children. Pam, welcome back.
Thanks so much.
So, Pam, you have put together a wonderful list of things that will help your child by reading aloud. Let's go through the list, perhaps, and just sort of share your quick bursts and thoughts on each one of these, because I think it's such a wonderful list. It's fantastic. The first one is develop shared values.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we've talked a little bit about that, but I would just say to add on to that, you know, one thing is, again, not with your child, but with your partner, whomever that is, or your extended family, to sit down and say, even just as an exercise, to say, well, actually, what are our values? Because as a family, I think sometimes we don't really take the time to sit down and ask ourselves, you know, for me, it was important from when my children were very young, and for my husband too, we wanted them to really feel a sense of love for the world and understanding that people around them are struggling, you know, that we have a nice life, but others are not always so, it's not so easy for people. And so that was important to us. Now, that's something that then when we're reading and we're looking and thinking about ourselves as readers, we're looking for books that reflect that value. But I think every family really is entitled to create its own, you know, little sort of, you know, a toolkit of values. And so you can kind of go out there and look for, is extended family really important to us? Well, there are authors who write a lot about grandparents and the value of taking good care of grandparents. And you can find those books, you know, in the library or on Amazon or in the bookstores. And so there, you know, you create little clusters and baskets of books that really do reflect and can send your message to your children. I mean, they're very impressionable. So it's an amazing opportunity to actually really influence the lives of your children. in a big way.
Next on the list was fall in love with language.
Yes. So, well, you know, that's the other thing that some of our great authors are, they're just brilliant, brilliant writers, even though it looks very deceptively simple. Like Margaret Wise Brown, you know, in Goodnight Moon, it looks so simple and you wonder what in the world does the child see is so special about this book. But actually, she was very careful about language, and she, even her rhymes, you know, being a little bit odd and off and, you know, kind of unsyncopated, they were very, like, kind of rough, is actually her loving language, and the child picks up on that very, very quickly. Poetry is another great way to introduce our children to the beauty of language, and for us to just stop and say, wasn't that a great line? Or reading like a nonfiction science book, and you come to this amazing, you know, sentence about the, you know, the lion's mane and the golden, you know, warm fur of the lion, and just to stop and say, that really gives me a picture in my mind about that animal, and doesn't it do the same for you? Because language is a tool, and our children will grow up with, if they have the sense of the sort of majesty of it, they'll grow up with a sense of that they can use it too to actually impact people.
Number three, build comprehension.
Yeah, so, well, you know, what happens is, you know, as our children get older, they go to school and there's a lot of work, and they come home and they've got a lot of homework, and we start to have struggles with our children around doing their homework and getting things done, and there's a, you know, question, do my kids like to read? And, you know, I have a lot of conversations with parents around boys and reading. You know, parents will say, well, my boys don't love to read. Well, the fact of the matter is that a lot of unfortunate time is spent in school really decoding language and not comprehending it. And as a result, our children sort of lose the flavor of why am I reading? Why even am I reading? And comprehension is a really, it's a really critical piece, which is to say, do I understand this? And if I understand it, like at what level do I understand it? Because one level is, oh yeah, I know that the character went into the wardrobe and didn't come out, you know, in the Narnia books. But the next level of comprehension is, you know, what does Edmund learn, you know, when he lies to Lucy and he meets the White Witch? And, you know, and then the even deeper level of comprehension is like, what are the metaphors in this book? You know, what is this really saying about humankind? And those questions, obviously, we're not asking that last question to a three-year-old necessarily, but we're starting the building blocks of comprehension. So that same younger child, as an older reader, is already very familiar with what it means to read deeply and read for meaning, and not just read because you have to get through it.
And number four is the power of story, which I'm going to add to myself when you give us your thoughts on the power of story.
Yes. Well, really, I mean, everything is all about story, and everybody has a story, you know, and when children read books about animals and little people like themselves, they become empowered to say, well, if the frog has a story, I could have one too. And the power of story also is the way we tell things, you know, once upon a time. That's why that opening is so powerful, because once upon a time, well, that's we could say that's how we could start the story of all of us. You know, once upon a time I was this, or once upon a time I was that, or once upon a time, you know, in the future. And so story itself, it's, you know, the foundation of everything. It's the American dream. It's what religion is founded on. It's like the one useful tool that we all use, no matter how different we are. And that's what I think children's literature is really teaching our children, is that everybody has stories, and stories are worth holding on to and telling and retelling, and that family stories become legends. And the way you tell your story, you know, as opposed to, oh, gee, you know, I didn't do very well on that test. My story is I didn't do well on that test, but I got back in the saddle the next day, and I just studied really hard, so the next test I did better. And that's also about story, you know. So story is very, very important for children. And parents get frustrated when the child comes home from school and says, the parent says, what happened in school? And the child says, nothing. And I think because the parent's not asking the right question. The parent is asking this very overall, very vague, what did you do in school today question. The child isn't operating like that, you know, but to instead say, tell me a story. What's one of your stories today from school? What is something that happened to you today? It will change the whole dynamic.
Hmm. Stories are important within the family, of course, but stories, as it turns out, I just wanted to add to this, are really shaping the web. They're shaping business. They're shaping everything in the following way. Great stories solve problems. You know, they teach us to be smart. They offer surprise and delight. You know, they focus on what happens next, right? Which is such a powerful element, right? They introduce great characters, you know. They're contagious, you know. They get passed around. And most importantly, stories engage readers. And on the web, that's what we're really trying to do, is to engage readers and keep them coming back for more. So, you know, one of the reasons we wanted to have you on the show today is this storytelling element is just so critical. And I think you've nailed it. It starts at a very young age. So I thought I'd throw that into the hat and let us ponder on that for a little bit. But your ideas are so important here as well. Let's go to the next one. Number five, be exposed to a variety of genres.
Yeah. So I think this is one of the reasons why I think teachers sometimes have a hard time in the classroom. Teachers tend, when they read aloud or they introduce their children to reading, they tend to gravitate to fiction and, you know, storybooks, like, you know, just only storybooks. And really all genres have stories in them. Poetry has stories, nonfiction has stories, but we need to bolster our exposure so that children can hear poetry from a young age and also hear nonfiction read to them from a young age, whether it's a book by Seymour Simon, who writes books about sharks and insects and bugs and snakes and things like that, or, you know, Shel Silverstein, who writes silly, funny, you know, nonsensical poems. Those are genres that our children, we want to expose them young before they say, oh, I don't like that, and before they feel in any way alienated from any of those genres. We can give them a nice balance of narrative, poetry, and nonfiction so that they're really ready for every subject area when they go to school. And beyond that, it's just actually as adults, most of what we read, I would say 90% of what we read is nonfiction. But when parents reach for a book when their children are young, they tend to select books that are fictional. So I like to have a good balance. You know, it's like a nutritious diet. We want to have a good balance.
Right on. Number six, learn about classic text structures.
Yeah, so there are some classic text structures. The very most simple one is a beginning, middle, and end, that stories have a beginning, middle, and end. But then, you know, when we get more complicated, we have, you know, novels and short stories, and then structures of poetry like haiku and sonnets, and in nonfiction we have articles and editorials and letters to the editor, and those are all, you know, different kinds of structures that the more familiar we can make our children with those from a younger age, the more likely they are to be comfortable as readers and writers as they grow.
Fascinating. I've got eight ideas popped in my head there. Find comfort.
Well, yeah. I mean, that to me, that's like the ultimate, because that's really why people read. Even if it's, you know, some really silly detective book or, you know, a romance novel. I mean, for adults, there are other ways that we're finding comfort through reading. And sometimes it's just, I need to rest my brain from, like, all the hard work I'm doing. I want to read, you know, I want to read a fast-moving, where I know it's always going to work out in the end. That's why people always loved Agatha Christie, because that was a very formulaic kind of approach, and it always worked. You know, you could really count on Miss Marple to solve the crime. And I think that's not, you know, accidental. I think really great authors like her just know that people really do want to be comforted. They want to be reassured. You know, they want to know that all is going to be right in the world. And just sitting with your child on a couch, or sitting with them in the kitchen, or sitting with them in their bed, and having that really comforting text along with them is just so peaceful. And it's just so important, because we're constantly running our children ragged. You know, we're running them around here and there and everywhere. And it's too much, you know, bringing them back almost like to the kind of old-fashioned hearth, around, gathering around a text. is really, really important.
Good stuff. Another three more in just a couple minutes, if that's possible. Build critical thinking skills.
Yes. Yeah, so, again, I mean, I think it kind of goes back to that comprehension piece, but a little bit maybe taking it one step further, which is that not everything that's in writing is something we agree with. You know, up until this point in our conversation, I've talked a lot about books that, you know, where I feel confident about the authors and I feel that they're reflecting my values. But being a critical reader is so important, from everything from, you know, the first time my daughter looked at me when she was 4 and said, "This book is terrible," you know, to much later on when you look at something on the internet and say, "I don't," you know, somebody's, you know, denying something that actually did happen, or when that, like, even with this whole WikiLeaks thing, like, how much we don't know what's true and what's not true, and we have to be really careful. Just because it's on the internet doesn't mean it's true. And it's the same with printed books, too. Everyone feels like the internet's so much more dangerous, but, you know, there are plenty of books out there that are written by people I don't trust one single bit, you know? So I want my children to grow up as very sharp readers and really critical readers, in the sense that they have their wits about them. You know, they're really thinking about, what is this author's agenda? What are people really trying to tell me here? And that, you know, that happens from a very, very young age, where we can say, "Do you agree with this author?" I mean, you can even ask that of a 4-year-old. "Do you agree? The author might be writing, you know, snakes are scary." And you may not want your child to think like that about animals or any living creature. So you might just say, "What do you think? Do you agree with this or not? I wonder why this author wrote this. Let's look on the back of the book and see, you know, is he a snake expert? You know, are we sure that he knows a lot about snakes?" So you're already, even from a very young age, you're asking critical questions. So as they get older and they're browsing the internet themselves, or getting a book from, you know, online, or going into the library by themselves, they already have your voice in their head saying, "Is this, do I trust this writer? Do I trust this voice? You know, is this someone that, or do I need to get more evidence somewhere else?"
Shape a lifelong reading identity.
Well, that's, I feel, kind of like the big idea. I feel like we have an opportunity when we're with our kids to really, really stoke the fire, in a way that, although, I mean, my work, I try to influence schools, but I actually think that we have a better chance at home. We have probably the best chance at home of influencing, because you can have, you know, from year to year, our kids don't always have the best teachers. Sometimes they're amazing, brilliant, wonderful teachers, and sometimes they're not. But we're with our children all along, and we're really the ones who get to shape and help them identify what a reading life could look like. So, you know, last night, for example, I was doing a reading at Barnes & Noble, and I happened to be standing next to a display of a set of books called Diary of a Wimpy Kid. And this woman and her husband came up to me and said, "You know, we want to ask you a question. We didn't want to ask it in the big group, but our son really hates to read. He really just doesn't like to read at all. What can we do? He's 10 years old. So I said, well, as I started to answer, the guy pointed behind me and he said, "I mean, he loves those books." He said, "But those books, well, they're not real literature." And I stopped him and I said, "Just, my main thing here is, and I'll be very blunt, don't say that anymore. Don't ever say that again." I said, "These books are fantastic." And the thing is, it's just that because there's drawings in them, the parents were concerned, you know, this isn't really, quote, good literature. And part about building the reading identity is, how are we identifying our children as readers? Just because we, you know, value books differently doesn't mean that that child isn't as much of a reader as we are. And so it's really about, like, naming when you see the child doing those things and saying, "Hey, wow, you know, I really appreciate you as a reader, and I'm excited that you just read for 25 minutes tonight. That's fantastic." And to kind of remove the sense of judgment from that, because I wouldn't, just like if I'm reading Agatha Christie, I wouldn't really want somebody to stop me and say, "Well, that's not really reading."
Hmm.
So that's kind of that idea about the identity.
And that's a great story as well, by the way, that should be passed on to those that doubt any reading, really the net, fuel all reading. All reading is good reading, perhaps. But your last one I just love, visit many worlds, hear many voices.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, that's part of that critical reading too. I mean, we don't want to censor our kids so much, but and we want them to be vigilant to like what they really will hear that may not resonate with them. But I think one of the great things and the great news about children's literature and young adult literature is that there's so many voices out there from all different countries and parts of the world and even parts of this country and writers who write about lots of really interesting things and passions that they have that reflect lives that we can't live 1,000 lives, but you know, through reading we can actually experience 1,000 lives. And I think that makes our kids grow up incredibly powerful and understanding and empathic, and hopefully, you know, this next generation, because of this and because of their access to children's literature, maybe they'll do a better job, you know, bringing peace to this world. Because I think if more of our politicians had, you know, read children's books when they were young, we might all just be in a much better place right now, because you can't hate people when you learn who they are. You know, they're just people just like us. So, and I think that's what literature does. It humanizes everybody.
An eye-opening discussion we've had today. Really appreciate you being on the show. I have a question for you, a final question, and that is, do you have any tips on really searching for the best books?
Well, of course, buy my book, What to Read When, no question about that. But
does it have a lot of references for great books, by the way? Great children books, great, you know, recommendations?
Yeah, well, I've got tons of recommendations, and I could say a couple just off the top of my head, but as far as also where, there are a couple of other great things. One is, I have to say that the internet is one of my favorite things on the internet is those, you know, if you like this, you'll also like this on Amazon, and Barnes & Noble has it too, where you can go on, because, I mean, it's simple, but really, it often is, like, they really give great advice. I love it. So if you say, you know, I like that book by Seymour Simon, and who else is out there, they'll tell you. And then, of course, if there's an independent bookstore in your neighborhood, I love independent bookstores. There aren't many of them left, unfortunately. But if there are, you'll go in there and you'll find a guru. You know, you'll find some amazing maven who will tell you, you know, if you like this, you'll also like that. And then as far as my recommendations, I've just got a couple of new ones that, you know, you might not have seen yet, so I'll just quickly tell you. One is called Bunny Days by Teo Nyeu, N-Y-E-U, and I really love it. I love the illustrations. And then another one, I think I had mentioned earlier in the conversation, called The Boss Baby by Marla Frazee, F-R-A-Z-E-E. And those are just two new ones if people are interested. But we have, my website is pamallen.com, and we're often posting on there, and I do blog on several different blog sites, including Parenting Pink, and sometimes on the Huffington Post, and then I have our nonprofit global literacy initiative called LitWorld, litworld.org. People could go and just visit and browse, and we often post book suggestions in all of those places. And speaking of Lit World, on March 9th we'll be celebrating World Read Aloud Day. So if people are interested, and if you guys are interested in getting involved, and any listeners are, to please visit litworld.org, and we can have a great day together reading to people all around the world.
Let us try to help you promote that at Life Tips as well. I'd be happy to do that. We attract about a million monthly visitors, and we'll try to get a banner up or something to promote that. So circle back with us. One final question on the tip for searching for books. Are there any award in recognition organizations that you feel are worthy of mentioning on the show as well, that you could actually look up and see what books have won awards?
Well, you know, the two great awards are the Caldecott and the Newbery. They're not, I'll be very, very blunt, they're not always children's favorite books, though. They often tend to be absolutely magnificent books, but chosen by all, you know, librarians and people who have a very, very, you know, sophisticated view of children's literature. Some of them are amazing, and those are, you know, great books. But I do love, the New York Times does a, once a year they do best illustrated children's books. That's online. You can, those, I actually really like those, and I think kids like those a lot. Those tend to be really appealing. And the American Library Association often has some great lists on their site that's really good. And then there's, a website that James Patterson hosts called Read Kiddo Read, and they're actually doing a competition right now. We're, for World Read Aloud Day, I'm going to announce at least two awards for what I consider to be the best read-alouds of the year, and we're going to hope we'll do that every year. So that would be posted after March 9th. People can go on and look for that. But those are kind of the big ones, and then there are other, you know, others, like Publishers Weekly actually has a good one too. You could go onto that website and take a look at that as well.
Well, Pam, we've really enjoyed having you on the show today. Thanks very, very much.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I enjoyed it very much, too.
Indeed. Until next week, everybody, I hope your life is a little smarter, better, faster, and wiser, and now educated on why and how to read aloud to your kids throughout their entire journey of life. Thanks for listening, and everybody, we'll see you next week.